D-Mace Fingan and Donick, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. And we are presented by Bet365. Whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, Nick Frazier here with you today. David Jane still off being a Disney adult for a couple of days.
Yes.
I don't fault him. I like Disney.
I don't either. But I had my time at Disney. Had my time.
I've only been to Disney World once. Uh-huh. It was when I was little, and I was terrified of the characters in the costumes.
So
absolutely terrified.
So when do y'all plan on taking Arlo?
Hopefully soon, and I hope that he did not get his dad's anxiety related.
When it comes to being around big, abnormally looking, large fictional characters.
Right, but it's different when you watch Mickey Mouse on TV.
Yeah,
and then you're
exactly
4 or 5 years old, and you go to Disney World, and then there's almost a 6 foot tall Mickey looking down at you. It's creepy. I get it. Hopefully David James
is also... How old were you, Adam?
I would venture to say maybe four or five.
See, this is my advice from a guy who moved to Orlando when I was 12 years old. And the first thing we did was go to Disney World, the Magic Kingdom. And I've been there many times since. My advice would be to resist as long as you can, because I've watched a lot of times when families bring their real little kids, you know, and I think the cutoff is about 5, because number one, you want your kids to remember being there, and if they're younger than 5, they're not going to remember ever being there, right? They just won't when they're old. Do you remember much when you were before kindergarten? I know I don't.
I mean, I remember being terrified by
the
characters. Right, but that's a small thing,
he never
right?
Went you back probably again. Don't.
And you're also not going to be able. The younger kids aren't going to be able to do the most fun rides.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're that age, not that they have. It's not like King's Island or someplace like that that's got really crazy rides, but there's some fun rides that unless you're a certain height, you can't really go. And so I think the prime age is like 9 to 12, if I had to say.
Good to know.
So that's just my 2 cents.
You know, best time to go with your kids. The best age to go with your kids, unquestionable, is when they're adults. I'm telling you.
I love going.
Yeah, I took Bailey and DJ a few years ago. And we don't deal with all the fluff, like all the little kid stuff.
Right.
You don't have to deal with that. You go straight to what you want to ride. You hit all the parks. You in and out. And it's good because everybody wants to ride the same ride. Everybody can ride every ride if they want to. You know, when you're a kid, that's not the case.
Well, we'll have to check in with David James when he's back on Wednesday.
Yeah, we should have given him this tutorial before.
Yeah, we should have.
Down there, but he was already committed because there's so many things. And D-Mace, you probably learned it too. Knowing how to navigate the fast pass and the little things that they've made technology-wise to make it a little easier to sit through the lines, because the lines can break down the strongest Disney fan, right? I've seen families down and out, man. They're sitting on the sidelines. They're just like, I'm done. They got the stroller. They're like, I can't go. I can't wear it. The lines are too long.
I've seen that before.
My kid's tired. He doesn't want to go anywhere. He just wants to nap. Like, we're like, we're Disney. Like, you get frustrated. Like, we've spent all this time and energy to get down here, and now we're sitting on the sideline. You don't want to do that. You want to be efficient.
Several years ago, before my wife and I were parents, we went on vacation to Atlantis in the Bahamas.
Yeah.
And it's much different when you're there as two adults versus a family attempting to wrangle several small children. And I remember at one point my wife and I were in line somewhere behind a family, and the kids were bickering, and the mom turns around and says, "We're going to have a good time," and it starts like berating the children. And I said to my wife, "I hope we're never like that when we're parents." And I know that at some point I'm going to be that dad. Arlo, we're going to have a good time.
No matter what.
Snap out of it. Dang it. Have fun.
I got another piece of advice that I got from Barry Trotz. Because Aaron and I told him that we were going on this extravaganza, right? And he said, take a break in the middle of the day. If you are staying on the ground somewhere, okay, and you can leave the park and go back and kind of regather at your hotel, and you got young kids, come back, take a little swim, get something to eat, take a nap, just chill for a couple hours. You're going to see, it seems on the surface like, wait a minute, we paid the money to get in the park. We're going to stay there all day. Come back and take a break, and then you're refreshed for the night, and you can take it all the way to the closing time. That was huge advice from Barry Trotz. And the other part is, that goes with that, get up and get in there right when the park opens. Because for the first hour, hour and a half, it's not full, right? So you can zip through and you can go on a bunch of rides before the lines fill up. See, these are little tips that I learned along the way, guys. See, I cannot believe that David did not tell us and talk to the Orlando boy right here, right? Because I could have helped him.
This has been how to avoid. This has been how to avoid meltdowns at theme parks with D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick.
That's right.
But gentlemen,
at least y'all can ride rides. I'm still working on that. All right.
Whoa.
You're tall enough to ride, Frazier.
Exactly.
But Frazier, I know that you and Chase and Joe have been monitoring this situation. We talked about it on Friday, ladies and gentlemen. We've got him, Ed the Zebra. Has been captured. Ed the Zebra, by the way.
Closer than I thought.
Ed the Zebra, by the way, got a full write-up in the New York Times. That's how important Ed the Zebra has been over the past week. And by the way, Willie, I was telling this to Derek before the show. Fox 17 had a write-up on its website about Ed the Zebra being recaptured and referred to him as a quote-unquote celebrity zebra. The definition of the word celebrity has been stretched to its absolute limit. Celebrity zebra Ed is how Fox 17 referred to the zebra who was captured and returned to its owner. And the video that the Rutherford County Sheriff's Office put out was hysterical because Ed the Zebra, he was put in a net and then was airlifted by a yellow helicopter. So there's just this video of a yellow helicopter in the sky with the zebra in a net dangling underneath it. He got a first-class trip back to his owner, who, by the way, the owner of the zebra, their identity has not been released, according to the New York Times. And also, this was my favorite paragraph from the story. Quote, how the zebra escaped or why the man owned it was still not immediately clear. Like, wow. I at some point would love to talk to this owner. That would be a great get for our program. The owner of Ed the Zebra.
It would be. I mean, I think it was a conspiracy. I really did. I think it was a conspiracy. It's just, there's no
How
way.
How so?
Okay, here's the deal. The zebra got loose, what, Friday, Thursday?
It was out and about for about a week.
Yeah, about Thursday. Let's just say Thursday. So you knew this zebra was out since Thursday. You decided it wasn't going to be until Sunday that you decided to capture it. To me, I think y'all like this. I think they wanted this. It's like a welcome to Madagascar. You know, let's watch the zebra run through, you know, Rutherford County and all these other places, and let's make memes of them. Let's tag them. Let's make accounts of them. Let's make money. Let's make it famous. It's a conspiracy, man. They could have caught that thing the minute he escaped, or she.
Do you believe that, Willie? Do you believe Derek's conspiracy?
I'm not gonna discount it. I think it's possible. I think it's possible because
they need the news, man.
I think it was a little bit of thought of. I think it was a little thought of. Hey, how much harm can a zebra
exactly.
do?
Exactly. Hold on. If that was a damn lion, they would have caught that thing an hour later if it was a lion.
And unfortunately, it could have had a sad ending. Like,
exactly.
I'm glad everything was done safely and they took their time and whatever. But
that was some buffalo running around.
It was a fun story to tell people, right? People in town, like CMAs are in town. I'm sure there was a lot of buzz going. Like,
the owner of the zebra, by the way.
Zebra yet?
The owner of the zebra, by the way, had it for less than a day before it escaped the next morning. So let's give it back. Let's give it back to the same owner who could not protect it for more than 24 hours.
Irresponsibility at its finest. Like, seriously. But, again, I just
think that's a piece of news I
did not
know. I think
all parties were involved, and it was a conspiracy to keep it going, to, you know, make it a lighthearted weekend to try to track the zebra. I just think it,
so
Rutherford County, all of them,
so
all
instead
y'all
in cahoots. So instead of a white Bronco, it was a black and white zebra.
Exactly. There we go. And everybody everybody want. We even gave it a name. Was that his real name?
Okay, so has the owner.
Was that the zebra's real name, Ed?
It's been known as Ed. That's all I know.
No, he actually has another name. I'm looking it up.
That's what I'm saying. So they even gave the zebra a name.
Are we working on the fencing, though? Are we working on the habitat for Ed? Because he's going to be out of there again. He had a great time.
Exactly.
If that same fence is there, he's gone.
And I think for Tennessee, you got to worry about crossbreeding.
Oh, man.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
That's a bridge too far, Frazier. I'm not thinking about
zebra.
That.
You better watch out. His name is Zeke, by the way.
Zeke.
Oh, Zeke the Zebra. Who in the hell threw out Ed?
I don't know where Ed came from.
Yeah. C is a conspiracy. C-O-N-spiracy.
This was my favorite quote from this story. Again, in the New York Times. The New York Times thought enough of Ed / Zeke the Zebra to do a full write-up in the New York Times. This quote from Lisa Marcia Sony, a spokeswoman for the sheriff's office, quote, "This is the first zebra to escape in Rutherford County, as far as I know, in the 43 years I've lived here."
I'm sure this is the first zebra that escaped, period. Not just in your 43 years.
It wouldn't shock me. I don't know if the citizens of Rutherford County are used to having zebras living among them.
It's like, man, seriously? Like, okay, I get it. I like it. It's fun. You got people in the New York Times writing about it. I mean, come on, the guy or
if the owner of that zebra, Zeke / Ed, is listening, we would love to have you on because I have a lot of questions. I have a lot of questions about why you even had a zebra in the first place and how Ed / Zeke was able to escape from your habitat / compound / whatever in less than 24 hours. So gladly, Ed / Zeke the zebra, he's safe. That's all we wanted to know. So over the weekend, we had game two of both the Stanley Cup final and the NBA finals. On Friday, the Florida Panthers even the series at 1-1, a 5-4 win in double overtime. Another excellent game between the Panthers and the Oilers. Game three is tonight in beautiful Sunrise, Florida. And in the NBA finals, the Thunder win 123-107 yesterday. I made sure to tune in because I made the mistake the last time around. And with the Indiana Pacers, you never know. But the Thunder had no issues with the Pacers this time around.
They got mollywop. That's about it. I mean, you know, it's interesting that, and again, I can't wait to see the ratings for both games. You know, whether it be the NHL Stanley Cup or the NBA Championship. I just don't know why the NHL Stanley Cup, these two teams, hadn't been able to garner more eyes to this game. Because if you loved the first game, I mean, the second game probably had you pulling your hair out. That's how good that game was, going into double overtime. Many thought it was probably going to go into a third overtime. But you just wonder how the last two games will affect these teams as they're moving forward. Because they've essentially played 2.5 games, really. Three. They played 3 games and 2 games because they had to go up.
Both went to overtime.
Yeah,
yep.
Both. One went to overtime. The other one to double overtime. So you wonder how this is going to affect them, both teams, as they move on in this series.
Well, they've had 2 days off. Mm-hmm. They haven't played since Friday. They did have to travel clear across the continent to get from Alberta to South Florida. But, Willie, do you know how much time through 2 games this series has been separated by two goals?
Well, I know that there was a 2-goal lead in the first game, and I don't think there was one in the second game, correct? So not very long, just less than a minute, because once it was 3-1, it became 3-2 real quick.
77 seconds. These two teams have been tied or separated by a 1-goal margin for 99.2% of the playing time through 2 games. The lone exception, a 77-second span during the second period of Game 1 when Florida led 3-1. That's when Sam Bennett scored and Victor Arvidsson responded. So the 70 seconds in between those two goals, the only time through two games that these teams have been separated by multiple goals.
It's fantastic drama to watch because of what you said. Let's contrast that stat with the amount of time that OKC has led the Pacers by double digits, right? I would say, just in off the top of my head, without guessing or without actually looking it up, I would venture to say for about half of the two games, OKC has been up by at least 10, right? And if not 10, 8 or 9, like it's been a chase. The Pacers have chased both games, and they caught them in the first game. They didn't catch them last night. But these games between the Oilers and the Panthers have had tremendous drama. It's been tight all the way. You've got great villains. You've got superstars playing great. It's fantastic. And so you mentioned the ratings, D-Mason. Mm-hmm. We talked about it. The ratings weren't good. And the market size, we talked about the reasons for it. But as a drama, as a product, I don't think the league could do much better.
No, you can't, because you're getting exact. If this was football or like two marquee teams in basketball or two marquee teams in baseball, I mean, I would have to think that the ratings would get some type of boost. But for some reason, I mean, these last two games have been, I mean, they've been wonderful to watch. Regardless if you like either team or not, it's just been good, close, hard hockey. But, man, oh, man, if you can't get eyes to this, and you're talking about the two of the best teams in hockey with some of the best players on ice, I mean, man, oh, man, what more can you do? There was a crazy stat, I think, in this game because this was a very physical game. They spent a lot of time in the penalty box. And the stat was they spent majority of the time on in the penalty box, like, you know, 4-on-5 or 3-on-4, they spent just as much time at that than they did 5-on-5.
There were a lot of penalties.
Yeah, and you wonder
early
in
game two.
Yeah, early in Adam, can this be sustainable moving forward? Because that last game was a physical game. I know the first one was physical, but the last one they played was physical. So you wonder how much can they sustain this type of physicality moving forward.
I think what they're hoping to do, and Adam, I think you've probably heard plenty of coaches or analysts say this, I think early in a series you try to set a standard, mm-hmm. and say we're not letting that go, right? And then hopefully the players adjust to the standard and you don't have to call penalties mm-hmm. as the series wears on. So because the players understand. It's like in basketball, if D-Mace is a little quicker than I am and I'm guarding D-Mace, I'm going to try to hand check D-Mace as much as I can, right? Because I know if I can't hand check him, I'm in trouble. So I'm going to see what I can get away with. If they call two quick fouls on me, I know I can't do that. I got to do something else. Or my coach is going to take me out and get somebody quicker on me. You see what I'm saying? Like mm-hmm. they have to try to get a hold on it. And they don't want to have a game where each team has five or six power plays. They don't want to. But at the same time, they have to let the player – they have to allow the stars to do their thing, or else you're going to have a big clutching and grabbing festival and nobody's going to score.
So game three of the Stanley Cup Final is tonight in Florida. Puck drop at 7 o'clock. By the way, one interesting note about the NBA Finals, and specifically Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who had 34 points last night, had 38 points in Game 1. His 72 points are the most by a player in his first two NBA Finals games, surpassing Allen Iverson by precisely 1 point. So Gilgeous-Alexander off to a great start. A better game from him yesterday, a more efficient game from the NBA MVP. 615-737-1025. We'll take your thoughts on Ed/Zeke the Zebra being captured, the NBA Finals, the Stanley Cup Final, all of that is on the table. 615-737-1025. But coming up next, Tennessee baseball's defense of its national championship has come to an end. We'll discuss that, but I also have a question for Vanderbilt baseball fans, and we do have one among us, but I have a question for Vanderbilt fans now that Tennessee baseball has been eliminated. 615-737-1025. Tune into Totally Hits 93.3 tonight as the Nashville Cats take on the Billings Outlaws. Pre-game starts at 6:30 and kickoff is at 7, with coverage also available on the Totally Hits 93.3 app and at totallyhitsnashville.com.
Congrats to Arkansas and their fan base and everybody in here. It's you don't like losing. I think I've shown the worst side of that, but it is a little different when you have the amount of respect for the people that you do, and they'll go off and do their thing. But as it relates to us and our place, be the first one to apologize to our fan base that's just as special, and that we're not going to Omaha. You can certainly go, but you're not going to be able to go as a fan. But looking back on this year, and if I'm remiss that we still have a team going, I apologize. But if you're a Vol fan, it was a pretty special year. You got to have all the office conversations, maybe even go all the way up to Columbus with football. I could go on and on with a bunch of other sports. You got one of the best men on the planet leading your basketball team, and you got to have all the fun that those guys provided. Women's basketball couldn't have been more exciting. You got to go watch the softball World Series in person if you wanted to, and I'm leaving plenty out, especially with tennis and swimming and diving and some other things that have gone on. But it can always be better, and no one will let you know more than SEC fans. But I think things are going in an outstanding direction, not just on our campus, but in the city. So it'll be up to us to continue to improve, because mainly myself could have done better this year. But at the same time, even though we're a little short of winning today and pushing to a game three, there's lots to take pride in for these guys to my left and then the other guys.
That was Tennessee baseball coach Tony Vitello yesterday after the Vols were eliminated in the Super Regionals by Arkansas. Vitello reminding Vols fans about all of the sports that fell short this past season.
Why? Did you not want people to concentrate on your sport and what you didn't do?
I know that his heart was in the right place.
I know it was.
But as I heard that, I snickered. I was like, he's just reminding Vols fans, hey, you came up short in basically in every sport. Sports.
He threw everybody under the bus.
I know what he was trying to do. I did get a little chuckle out of that. So the
y'all mad at us. Look at what those guys and girls have done. Nothing the same.
The Volunteers eliminated by Arkansas, swept out of the NCAA baseball tournament. The Vols lose 4-3 on Saturday, 11-4 yesterday, 10 hits in 2 games for Tennessee baseball as the defense of their national championship comes to an end. And I know that Jared's had a lot of these conversations. Robbie and Joe had these conversations. I imagine that roughly half of Jared's show today will be trolling Vols fans based on what I saw on Twitter yesterday. And we'll talk to Jared at the end of the show. But here's the question I have for all of our Vanderbilt baseball fans out there. 615-737-1025. Our phone and text lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And I will pose this question to our resident Commodore, Willie Donick, first. Is the UT-Vanderbilt rivalry this season a wash? And I'll explain. Tennessee went further than Vanderbilt in the NCAA tournament. We know, we talked about it a lot last week. Vanderbilt, the number one national seed, didn't even make it to its regional final. The first time ever since the tournament took on its current format more than 25 years ago. The first time ever that the first number one national seed, or the overall national seed, I should say, did not reach its regional final. Tennessee made it to the Super Regionals for the fifth year in a row, but were swept out of the Super Regionals. But Vanderbilt won 3 of 4 against Tennessee baseball this season, including a 10-0 win, a run rule win, in the SEC tournament. So I'm not talking big picture right now. I'm talking about this season. Willie, is the UT-Vanderbilt rivalry this season a wash in your mind?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure both sides would argue, you know, Vanderbilt had the head-to-head, and that was a head-to-head winning without a game being played on their home field. So I give that a big edge to Vanderbilt. They won 2 of 3 in Knoxville and a decisive win in the SEC tournament, and Vanderbilt won the SEC tournament. So that's a big edge to Vanderbilt. And for Tennessee, I could argue that when you make the Super Regional, it's not a bad year, right? They sagged at the end of the season, but they still were able to win a regional. So that's a good year. Like, if you put yourself in that spot every year, you're going to end up getting to Omaha and winning in Omaha eventually. So both programs, I think, are right in the mix of the teams nationally every year that you would consider an Ohio State, an Alabama, a Georgia right now, teams that are in the mix every year in college football. Vanderbilt and Tennessee are pretty much in the mix every year in baseball. Vanderbilt is coming out of maybe a little dip where you were worried, are they going to move out of that group of teams? I'm very confident now they're going to be in that group of teams going forward for a while. You can't win it every year. And I would say, and because I saw Arkansas here, Arkansas, I think Vanderbilt lost in the regular season three regular season games at Hawkins Field, or maybe four. Maybe four, and three of them were to Arkansas. Arkansas was fantastic. It came in to Nashville and swept Vanderbilt. Arkansas in Fayetteville with that crowd is tough. They might be the best team this year, so there's no shame in losing to them. So, you know, just because I'm looking at it from a Vanderbilt point of view, the head-to-head is big for me, and the SEC championship means something to me. So I would say 51-49 Vanderbilt, but I could argue either way.
I'm with you for this reason. I don't think the series between or the rivalry this season has been a wash for this reason. I think because Vandy was able to do something that they hadn't done in a very long time, was to win a series in Knoxville. So that was an accomplishment in itself. And then they go and they win the SEC championship. Which people didn't think they were going to win, but they went through and they started playing some of their better baseball of the season. So they go and win a championship that probably wasn't expected by everybody else, but I'm sure they went in and said we could win it just as you know, just like everybody else can. So when I look at it from that standpoint, I'm leaning more toward, you know, Vandy this season, but it doesn't take away from what UT has been able to do. UT fans look at it as if, you know, hey, listen, we went further than y'all in the College World Series playoffs, you know, and we were able to play good baseball and move forward, and y'all got basically rolled over and couldn't score any runs. So I think if you're looking at it from a, you know, 50,000-foot view, I tend to think just for this season, I think you would lean more toward Vandy because I think when they went down to Knoxville and was able to win a series and they hadn't done that in a very long time, I think that tilted the scale slightly toward them.
Yeah.
I think the head-to-head means a lot in the rivalry locally because of the fan bases. And Tennessee had gone through a stretch where not only were they winning games against Vanderbilt, but they were winning in a way that was really sticking it to, you know, just losses that stung. Right, either some late game heroics or some fireworks that, you know, where Tennessee would taunt and then back it up by winning. I don't think you can put a price on Vanderbilt sort of in the last couple years turning the table. Last year was a little bit better. Tennessee won the first two games in Nashville last year, and it looked like, wow, is Vanderbilt ever gonna are they gonna find a way to get back and start beating them at all? Right? Are they gonna sweep Vanderbilt and Nashville? But they won the third game and they split two games in the SEC tournament. So they beat them a couple times in a year that Tennessee obviously had their greatest success. They won the whole thing. So that was the start of it. And then this year, as D-Mace pointed out, to go to Knoxville and win two out of three, I think that was very satisfying in the rivalry for Vanderbilt fans. Because Tennessee was kind of in their head a little bit, I think, for a year or two there.
Yeah. It's a good question, not just because I'm the one that posed it, but I am wondering about it because I do agree that the head-to-head really does matter. At least it does to me. Winning 3 of 4, 2 of 3 on the road, a huge win in the SEC tournament. I think a lot of people didn't know that you could be run-ruled in college baseball until they saw Vanderbilt do it to Tennessee in the SEC tournament. So Vanderbilt absolutely has the edge and head-to-head. But then you consider the historic nature of Vanderbilt's, for lack of a better term, collapse in the Nashville regional, mixed with UT getting back to the Super Regionals for the fifth year in a row, while Vanderbilt has not been there over the past 4 years. So I think it's pretty darn close. I may go 51-49 Vanderbilt as well, Willie. I would be curious to hear from Vanderbilt fans. I'm sure we'll hear from UT fans as well. Just a note, our text line is down right now. So if you want to chime in, 615-737-1025 on our phone line. You can also hit up the YouTube chat of our program for your comments as well as we figure out the text line. But still, the Vitello era of Tennessee baseball has been wildly successful. Although UT did not make it back to the College World Series, they still have three College World Series appearances over the past 5 years and, of course, a national title. So over the past several years, you can just, if you want to go to when Tony Vitello took over that program, Tennessee has the decided edge against Vanderbilt. But this year, it does feel like a split. Vanderbilt won the head-to-head, then had an historic loss in the NCAA tournament. UT goes to the Super Regionals. So to me, it feels like a split. And I want to hear what...
It's a good question, too, just to throw out there, is because this could go for, I think, football and basketball, too.
Absolutely.
Winning the SEC tournament, to me, is a great accomplishment, but it seems to be, for some people, who cares? And I don't look at it that way. Like, that's a banner hanging. Yeah, you know, Adam's like, oh, boy, you're going to open that can of worms, the banner hanging?
Yeah, let's leave that one in the closet, yeah. Willie. Let's not dust that one off.
That is something when you get to dogpile and celebrate a championship in a league as tough as the SEC in basketball or baseball. And I think, too, it's somewhat equivalent when you win the SEC championship in football, even if you don't win the national championship. I think some people are like, who cares? Who cares? But I care. I think that's a big thing to win a league championship.
615-737-1025. Again, our text line is a bit wonky right now, but our phone lines are open. The YouTube chat is open. 615-737-1025. And, of course, X/Twitter. Is the UT-Vanderbilt baseball rivalry this season a wash after Tennessee is swept out of the Super Regionals round by Arkansas over the weekend? 615-737-1025. This week's Nashville's best deal is Staley's Chicago Italian Dining, one of Nashville's best-kept secrets and winners of numerous Best of Awards. Enjoy authentic Italian beef sandwiches, Vienna Chicago dogs, and the best gyros south of Chicago. Get half off a $20 gift card now while supplies last at thegamenashville.com/deals. D-Mace, Finnegan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, jamming right now. And Adam Finnegan talking Tennessee baseball, eliminated by Arkansas in the NCAA Super Regional round, losing 4-3 on Saturday, 11-4 yesterday, as the Vols are unable to get back to Omaha and defend their national title. So my question to all of you at 615-737-1025, is the UT-Vanderbilt rivalry this season a wash? Vanderbilt beat UT head-to-head 3 out of 4, 2 of 3 in Knoxville, a 10-0 win in the SEC tournament. But Tennessee did get farther than Vanderbilt in the NCAA tournament. Vanderbilt suffered an historic loss as the number one national seed in its own regional. So to me, it does feel basically like a wash. We will take your thoughts on that. But Willie, I found this to be interesting about the makeup of the College World Series. So there's one spot left. I believe there's one spot left. Murray State plays Duke today in Game 3 of the Durham Super Regional. The 7 men's College World Series teams so far, at least when this tweet was sent by Chris Vanini of The Athletic, have come from 6 different conferences. That's right, so I do have it right. 2 out of the SEC, LSU and Arkansas. 1 out of the ACC, Louisville. 1 out of the Big 12, Arizona. 1 out of the Big 10, UCLA. 1 out of the Pac-12/Independent, Oregon State. And 1 out of the Sun Belt, Coastal Carolina. Murray State out of the Missouri Valley Conference, and of course Duke out of the ACC. So if Murray State can beat Duke, 7 out of 8 teams come from different conferences, which I like.
Yeah.
I like the variety there.
Yeah, you should. I think it's the parity within the league because, going into it, the SEC was the powerhouse. And rightfully so, look at how many teams they had and where they were seeded. But then as the tournament goes on, first you have the number one team overall get knocked off in Vandy. Then you have slowly but surely other SE teams getting knocked off. And now you look at it, it's a and I think this is probably what's more indicative of what they want to see as far as those who, you know, control it all. The sort of the parity in it, because you wouldn't see this in football. I'm not sure you would see this in basketball. But in baseball, I think you have an opportunity to see it because of the parity. Yes, you know, the SEC was a dominant conference. But then once you get into play and he's three out of, you know, you got to win two out of three. And it's all about strategy. And when do you, you know, put your best pitcher out there? And how many of them do you have? And can you, you know, do it in a way to win a series? So there's a lot of things that come into factor that doesn't in other sports. So I think this is pretty much, I mean, the SEC probably doesn't like it. But I think this is more indicative of, you know, what they want to see in regards to the parity from other conferences.
So, Willie, we were discussing the parity in college baseball because depending on the outcome of the Murray State-Duke game in the Durham Super Regional, you would have, if Murray State beats Duke, you would have representation of seven different conferences in Omaha. You would have the SEC with two, the ACC, Big 12, Big 10, Pac-12/Independent Sun Belt, and Missouri Valley Conference. Your thought on that parity in the College World Series?
Well, we talked about this a lot last year with the NIL. That is one thing a team like Murray State can do is if you play the portal right, regardless of what league you're in, you can come up snake eyes and have a different team that doesn't do well at all. But you could also have a different team that really comes together with a lot of new guys. And I haven't studied Murray State's roster. I would imagine that they're like your Coastal Carolinas of the world that probably had some guys moving around, junior college guys, transfer guys, and you've got a really good mix. So I think that's where the Murray States have a chance, is with a special group of guys who you hit it big. It's probably not a lot of NIL people. It's just guys that weren't in a good situation that were looking for the right spot with a team that would give them an opportunity to play, and it's worked really well. So I think that's what we're seeing in college hoops as well. I our theory in college hoops, which I think I stand by, and in baseball will be like this too, the top teams, and especially with this decision that's been made too, mm-hmm. are probably only going to get better and more streamlined at how to use their resources and the advantages they have over the Murray States. But in the meantime, good for Murray State. And so I'll ask the Durham, the man born in Durham.
Yes.
Were you watching that regional at all? Did that get your attention?
I watched a bit of the first game yesterday. I was out and about and saw the score, and I said, I think I'll do something else. So I will try to tune in. I will try to tune in today for the decisive game, which starts at 6 o'clock between Murray State and Duke. But yes, Murray State walloped Duke yesterday 19-9. So yes, by the time I caught a glimpse of the score, I just decided to tap out. Wasn't sure it was going to be a productive use of my time. But I do want to ask you one thing, Willie, about Tennessee in particular. Keith Law of The Athletic, a highly regarded, well-known baseball writer. The Athletic was running a live blog on the Super Regionals. Our friend Mitch Light was on there. I think Joe Rexroy was on there as well. And Keith Law had a post that said this, quote, "I am shocked, shocked." This was dripping in sarcasm, by the way. "I am shocked, shocked that Liam Doyle wasn't at his best a week after he was overused last weekend in the regionals. Liam Doyle against Arkansas went 3 2/3 innings, 5 hits, 5 runs, all earned, 2 walks and 6 Ks on 73 pitches. In the regional round, he threw 104 pitches against Miami, Ohio, and then came on in a save situation against Wake Forest and threw 31 pitches. So 103 35 pitches over two games for Liam Doyle in the regional round. Perhaps didn't have his best stuff yesterday. Well, definitely did not have his best stuff yesterday against Arkansas. Do you think there is a correlation there, Willie?
I do, and I think that was a little bit of an old school approach. And, you know, a kid who's a competitor and probably wanted to do that. He wanted to try to push himself because he thought that was the only way that they were going to have enough to, A, survive the regional against Wake Forest, but also because they were pushed to the limit there. And to beat a team like Arkansas, he had to hope he could recover. It probably won't hurt his draft stock at all, but we talked about Chase Burns, right, and some of the nuances of how programs handle their pitchers. I think Tennessee was willing to push the envelope a little bit. And look, this is not for me to decide, but I do wonder, because I don't know what Liam Doyle gets for his NIL, but I would imagine if you switch from Ole Miss to Tennessee, there's a monetary piece attached to that. I'm only speculating. Let me ask you, D-Mace, if you're paying a kid more and you know you've only got him for 1 year, are you more apt to push that kid because you're saying, man, we've invested a lot. He's going to be gone at the end of the year. We're paying him. We got to win. He's our best guy. Let's push the envelope a little bit. I'm just curious about that.
Yeah, I think it would be as a coach anyway, that would be sort of something that would happen innately because you figure he's only here a year, so we got to get the most, we got to get as much as we possibly can. If we're going to win it, we need to win it now, or push this player now because he's not going to be here next year or she's not going to be here next year. So I think it happens, even if you probably are not, you know, setting out for it to happen. I think, you know, it does because it's like, okay, the sense of urgency is going to be there because you know after this season that person's not going to be on your team any longer.
That is a good point. I'm sure Tony Vitella will hit that transfer portal. The Vols will reload and be back in the mix next year. I know that there's a lot that has to change, Willie. I mean, a lot that's going to change about both Vanderbilt and Tennessee. But what do you think about the state of the rivalry as both clubs reload for next season?
It's hard. I don't know all of the status of Tennessee's roster. And there's always an X factor because, A, there are some really good recruits, I'm sure, that will have an opportunity to get drafted. It's not as prevalent as it was a few years ago because the draft has less rounds. So the top recruits, and Tennessee and Vanderbilt both have really top-end recruits. There's going to be a couple that could swing the recruiting class as to whether they sign professionally, like where they get drafted, or they come to school. And that's happened year after year with Vanderbilt, and it's happening more with Tennessee. Tennessee, we know, they are big fish hunters, fishermen in the portal, right? They will put big money out there to go get a couple of big-time guys. Vanderbilt's more... I think, as we pointed out, their strategy seems to be a lot more of, let's find the guy who is on the way up, who is maybe looking for something a little bigger, who was more of the mid-major guy that could be a really good SEC player. And they want the base of their team to be the recruits that they develop over 3 or 4 years. I think Vanderbilt is going to be in a really good place next year. I don't think they're losing a lot of huge big-time players. I think they're good. I don't know about Tennessee's turnover, but I know that Doyle will be a high first-round pick, so that's their ace that they're going to lose for sure.
615-737-1025. Our phone line is driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Our text line, we are endeavoring to get back on our text line, but you can call us at 615-737-1025.
Let's go old school today. You gotta just dial it up. Hit us on the Vine, man.
This phone in the studio has a cord. I can't even believe it.
Did Willie say Did Willie say hit us on a vine?
Is that?
Yeah.
I'm not familiar with this term.
See, Willie, you threw something out there. Adam is not familiar with it. Exactly.
I mean, my version of this.
I just hadn't heard that in a long time.
There used to be a time when you would have to wait until 8 or 9 o'clock so that you could get your free minutes.
Oh, yeah.
So that you could use the cell phone. So, you know, I made the mistake one too many time of calling girls I like before 9 o'clock, and I used up those minutes. My parents were not pleased. But I was just happy a girl wanted to talk to me on the phone.
Do you ever have a rotary phone in your house?
No, I did not have a rotary phone in my
house.
Yes, I have.
Might want to grab one of those.
Old school.
Hey, he's telling you, man.
615-737-1025. You can hit us up on the Vine. I guess that's what Willie is referring to. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, I always like to listen to national NFL shows about the Tennessee Titans because, look, a lot of people outside of Nashville, they're not talking about the Titans. But I always like when intelligent football minds talk about the Titans. And there was a podcast that I like to listen to that discussed the Tennessee Titans, and there was something very funny about their conversation about the Titans offseason, and we'll get to that next. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063, The Game.